That was Guatemala.
Jordan.
Oh, I mean, the Middle East, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What drove you to do all these things? You have done many remarkable things.
Yeah. I don't know. They're fun. It's fun.
I had a feeling it was like you had to get this out of your system.
No, I do it again in a New York minute.
Would you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, your Panama trip certainly was.
That was amazing. Amazing. Walking through virgin rainforest and seeing wild apes and monkeys and snakes. And
you saw a tarantula too.
Saw a tarantula right where I was having dinner. He came up out of the ground. I only saw one little leg wiggle. And then the porter I was with picked that leg and pulled a little bit, and the tarantula came up out of the ground. He's as big as my hand. It was as big as my hand.
Wow.
Fantastic. Right where we were having dinner.
And he was all calm about it.
Well, we put him on a banana leaf and threw him off in the forest. But I had to go to bed that night. And I realized that as we were making dinner, I'd left the tent flap open on my tent. What's crawled in there in the meantime? I had a hard time going to sleep that night. I remember walking over a low hill in the middle of the forest, and we got to the sort of the, what we thought was the highest point of the hill, and the guide turned to me and said, "This is the Continental Divide."
Wow.
Between the Eastern Plate and the Western Plate. Very cool. That was very cool. I stood with but one foot on each.
It seems crazy to me. I thought you were following the old Spanish road.
That's right, we were. The Camino Real. And we followed it, and it disappears in places, so you have to try to find it again. But there was one thing, part where we were walking through the forest, and there was some rock coming out, which was unusual, because you don't usually see bedrock in the forest, in the rainforest. And we were going to, and it was quite narrow. And we were going to walk through, and the guide backed us up. And he said, "Look at that now. Look carefully at that." And I looked at it, and the rock came down, but then it widened a little bit and then came down. And he said, "Does that look natural? Would that happen naturally?" And I realized it wouldn't. And it had been chipped on either side, so that the burros could go through with their bags on the side of them. That's why the rock went a little wider, like that.
Wow.
So that's how we knew that we were on the trail at that point. There were many other times where we were walking in the forest and you'd stop for a minute, because there on the forest trail were flat rocks, maybe 50 or 60 or 80 of them, and no streams nearby. But you never see that in the forest.
No.
But that is a remnant of the trail, of the old gold trail. So you're not on it. I wasn't on it the whole time. There were times we had to go, many times we had to walk through streams because it was easier than cutting through the bush.
Did you write up a story about that?
Yeah, I did. It published in the magazine. One thing that was really cool is we were walking in the middle of, inside the forest, and one of the porters was, he wore bare feet, and he kicked something and he stopped and we picked it up, and there was a piece of terracotta, half of a curve of terracotta, in the middle of the forest in a tiny little stream. And how did that get there?
It wasn't the gold road.
I don't know. How did it get there? There was another time where we came across the remnants of a bridge that had, in the middle of the forest, there was a field stone on one side of the river, a stream, and on the other side, and rocks and water gushing, and railroad ties going like this, bent over. And the Americans had gone way into the bush there in the 1920s looking for manganese. Didn't find enough to make it worthwhile and had abandoned everything. We went up on one side and saw these old bucket railway cars tipped over and rusted in the forest, left there from the 1920s.
Wow.
And then the guy told us that the native people, the Embera, who live in that forest, they had somehow heard that some people across the ocean, which would be the Chinese, needed iron. So the Embera had been trying to break up the last bits of the railway and carry this iron off to try to sell it to this nation across the ocean. Very naive. But that's what we followed. We kept coming across pieces of railway, iron rail, left beside because they'd carry it, and it was so bloody heavy they just dropped it and left it. It was really neat. That was a heck of a good journey. Yeah.
You know, I did something stupid like that too. If you remember up at the house, as you come up to the basement door, there was a juniper planted there, and I built up a rock wall.
I remember that.
And there's a part of a hub of a wheel.
Yes.
In that.
Yeah.
You know where that comes from?
No.
Nordite.
Oh, really?
From the coal mines up there.
Oh, yeah.
So I carried that stupid wheel way out. God, it was so heavy. So I dumped my clothes to the
When I went in 1976 to Nordegg with my grade 6 class, you know, remember I did that? And they, in that school, a Pine Street school, every grade 6 had to do a whole half-year study of the town of Nordegg, the history and the geography and geology and so forth. And then at the end of the school year, the grade 6 class would go down and stay in some cabins nearby, and we'd go to the actual abandoned town and look at the various places we've been studying in books. And I remember walking through the edge of the old abandoned Nordegg, which was coal, I think. And I found an old book. It was all full of coal dust, and I picked that up. And I found a dirty old pair of overalls, and I picked that up too. I was going to take that home. And I remember carrying it, dragging it behind me, and thinking, what the heck am I doing? And I dropped the overalls because they were smelly and sort of damp and moldy. But I kept the book. I brought that book home. I eventually threw that out too. I don't know what I was thinking.
You don't know where it's gone?
Oh, no, long gone.
Yeah.
I photographed in 3 different refugee camps in Thailand, you know? 3 different ones. And one of them, called Chokla, was a camp entirely devoted to people with cholera. So I went with an American doctor, and we had to wear masks. We walked all through the camp, and I took pictures of people going about their daily life. All of them had cholera.
But I thought it was a lethal
disease. Yeah, people were dying all over the place. But you can have the early stages of cholera, I guess you can still do things. Because I saw one man with a hammer and a chisel carving a totem pole. And I saw a woman bathing her children. I have pictures of her bathing her children. But that entire camp was quarantined. And the biggest camp was one called Mae La that had 6,000 people in it.
Cholera also?
No. No, regular camp, but 6,000 people living in bamboo and wood thatched buildings.
Was that the Karen tribe?
Yeah, mainly Karen, yes. And 2 weeks after I left there, the Thai army, who guard the gatepost to get in and out, withdrew. And the Democratic Karen Buddhist Army, or the DKBA, who are backed by the military regime in Rangoon, pushed forward and burnt that camp to the ground. 2 weeks after I left.
Wow.
There was a bomb shelter at every camp for the Western expats working in the camp. And they told me that there was another American doctor there from Massachusetts. And he told me that one time they were told that the Buddhist Democratic Army was coming through, and they hid in the shelter. And he could hear the soldiers walking through the village calling out his name. So he was ready to go home.
I would think so.
Yeah. They wanted to take him back over.
Sure, to heal their soldiers.
Yeah.
Gee, that takes a lot of guts.
Yeah. That's the way to see
you
the
know
world.
How much of this does Owen know?
A fair bit of it, yeah.
Does he?
Yeah.
Because that was my obsession. I had felt I had done so many things away from the family, and you guys didn't know what I'd done.
Right, right.
I wanted to write it down. I wanted to document it somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when my kids were little, they used to ask me for travel stories all the time, but I think they've forgotten them now.
That connection from one generation to the next, to me, is exceedingly important.
Yeah. I remember you telling us logging stories when we were little.
Yeah.
Hiding your lunch in the middle of the log pile and the bear pulling the logs off.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. I remember all that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're camping on this old gold mining road, and the moose coming through in the night and tearing the fly in the tent right off all of us. And it, as it ran through, it got caught up in the guy wires.
Yeah.
We woke up and thought, this is the end of the world. And we looked down the road, and the poor moose had not hit. There were two tents, and by sheer luck, it avoided getting caught in the house. But beyond that was this flying white linen going like this. We all got dressed. We started up a fire. We sat down to drink coffee and talk because none of us could sleep.
No, no. He took the tent right off your heads.
Hmm?
He took the tent right off your heads.
Yeah. The tent and the fly disappeared completely. And then the only thing we could do was to crawl into the other tent, which was also occupied by too many people, so we were like this, trying to sleep. And it was hard to fall asleep because all of a sudden you could hear...
Somebody laughed.
People thought this story was just crazy. So you kept hearing, it was like sort of like a percussion. And we finally just simply collapsed into sleep.
Yeah.
And then we had to go back to town to get another tent. And nobody would believe us. They thought we had burnt it, so we were criticized.
Really?
But...
That would have been 1956, 57?
56.
56.
My first summer in BC forestry.
Wow.
I had such a wonderful summer, I can't tell you. It was just absolutely wonderful.
Oh, good.
And I scared the shit out of my mother.
Yeah.